You are listening to Journeys on Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com and simulcast with wolfspiritradio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth. Blue Monday. Yes, it is. It's Blue Monday. And I had got three versions of Blue Monday lined up for Sean's show because I thought, you know, he always does it. All right, it's Black Friday. Let's play Black Friday by, Stevie Dan. Today I saw Star. I'll be right ahead of the game. And no, it's Banjo Tunes. Oh, well. Anyway. So, I couldn't just sit on those. I mean, here we go. Journeys JP. Good evening. 16th of the 1st of the 17th. Adds up to 34, adds up to 7. There you go. Good one. Of course, 7 and 16. Good evening. All right, so what are we doing? Well, to be honest, I haven't really thought about what's happening tonight, so... Tonight, please call me and give me something to talk about, or indeed, throw questions at the chat room. You could call in and interview me. What else could we do? We could turn radio on its head. How do we do this? I just sit here in silence and you talk at the radio. How about that? No, I'm bored with that already. That's not going to work. So, do call in. What's been happening? Well, let me have a quick check of the chat rooms here. I can see you here. There you go. I can see you. There you go. Hands up in the chat room. Have we got anybody on B here? So, what should we talk about? There's a thought. What's been going on? Actually, I could read you. Right, so one of the things that's been happening, I've finally gotten around to putting all my websites back up again. In August, my virtual server, which was in a London server farm, got completely hacked, and I therefore, you know, well, not I didn't therefore, but I didn't have the time. You know, things are really busy. You know, just me and Colleen running this station is quite time consuming. Doesn't leave us with very much else. And if at the moment, like at the moment, Colleen is ill, then there's very little time. I'm gonna, you know, we have a skeleton staff. Although this particular piece of staff is a little less than skeletal. However, meanwhile, what was I talking about? This is being, yeah, how's my body feeling? Yeah, we can. You can join me on Skype. You can call in to a UK number in 0141-356-4141. I can put in my Skype. My Skype name can go in here. Alright. Yeah. Sorry, I'm just smelling. It's a bit strange in here because I've just put some one of these long burning logs on, and I just opened the stove, and it's a bit of a heady atmosphere here. There's some solvent in the air. All right, so what's going on? There's Vanessa here. No, I'll put it in there. So, indeed. Now, I was just about to talk about something quite fascinating. Oh, it's gone. It'll come back in a second. I'll just have some tea. That usually helps. Yes. That's better. I just ate some dark chocolate, which has made the back of my throat all stick together. That's not a good thing to do before we start. Anyway, yes, it'll get going in a minute. This is my waiting for my brain to get back into host mode rather than producer mode. And oh yeah, that's right. I was going to be talking about some of my guide messages. That's right. Talking about websites. That's right. Yes, back. So, in August, my websites were hacked, and a couple of weeks ago, I started the project of restoring everything. Now I've got most of them working again, and the one that I was most interested in was this, the crownbasetransmissions.com, and I was talking a little bit about it last night. I hadn't quite gotten the URL and the domain name fixed last night, but it works now. So if you type in www.crownbasetransmissions.com, it's the website of my guides, and in 1988 I started receiving various messages, and I'll tell the story there. It's on the front page, so I won't bother repeating it. There we go. And so, So I started writing down the guidance into a Word document quite a few years ago, and because I used to thought, you know, when I first started receiving messages, I used to think, oh, using a pen and paper is special. You know, I used to use a special pen and a special paper to receive messages from my guides, and it was just kind of, well, it's. Doesn't matter what you're typing, you know, you can type it, you could hammer it into rock if you like. So I started typing it into a Word document, and then I numbered them and I labeled them so I know, and I dated them, date stamped them. Essentially, date stamp. Really, really, you know, if you ever do anything like this, I just want to say, here's the thing. If you ever have any messages, from your guides, always, always, always date stamp it. Always date stamp it. The dates are often significant. The date between the day you read it again and the day you write it again, the distance in time, all these things are significant. They're all in cycles. Right. Let me see if I can bring Nick in. Ah, now. It won't accept you. Ah, damn it. There it is. Right, so I'm trying to bring a guest in, but he's not gonna, it's not working. It just, Skype drops him immediately. Let me just see what the Skype said. It doesn't say anything. It just says, yep. Oh, can't be added till they accept your contact, accept my contact request. Oh, this is silly. Skype is so silly. Skype is so silly. Then this is like, not good. All right, so let me, if I, can I add to, I don't know, I'm already on this. Is oh, gold. All right, let's try it again. That is very weird. I'm going to try a different way of doing this. This is something that's been happening with Skype for the last few weeks. Ever since it started not working anymore. All right. Right, okay. Can you call 141? I have a studio number. I think it works. Has been working for a while. All right, but while I've been while I'm talking so it's really very good to date your stuff. I tend to use I don't know if anybody's ever noticed that anything that's ever posted on Wolf Spirit Radio has a reverse date format. You see, because you know I'm British, as if you didn't know. And when I write a date, it's for instance today is 16/01/27. However, if you're American, you'd say 01/16/2017. You see? Did I say 27? I meant 2017. Anyhow, so we both write it in a confusing non-sensible way. So I do it the other way. So I say 2017/01/16. And you see, if you stack all of those, if you wrote a file that each was named like that, and you sorted it alphabetically, it would automatically collate to date order. And that's why I do it. It's just being a computer head thing doing. Right, so. Okay. Try calling. Okay. Alright. All right, what's this? All right, All right, now let's see.
What?
Hey! So
I do it the other way.
Okay, now you have to turn off your radio.
01/16, and
hello.
That's killed it. Hello, Nick.
How are you doing?
All right. Can you hear me? Yes, I can hear you very well.
Ray! Awesome.
Nice cup of tea. So, are you down in South London?
I'm in East London, East Ham.
East Ham, that's right, of course. Yes, just further east from where I used to be. Cause I come, of course, from Bethnal Green.
Oh, lovely. I'd actually like to live there. I've got a good feeling about that sort of area.
Yeah, it used to be nice. I am sure. I don't know, I haven't been there for a long time now. Anyhow, how can I help? Welcome on to, Journeys. You're across, two networks. We do have an FCC rule. You understand the FCC rules?
Nope.
The seven words. Are you? Don't swear.
I won't swear.
Okay. That's all right.
Is that it?
Basically the FCC rules means please don't swear.
Okay.
Or I just cut you off straight away. That's what I have to do. So, meanwhile, in Stately Wayne Manor, how are you doing? What's up?
I'm doing good. I'd like to talk about common law.
Would you?
I would.
Is it common?
It is.
Is it lawful?
Absolutely.
Tell us about common law.
Okay. First principles. Piranha fish live in groups, right?
Uh-huh.
For them to live in a group, there has to be a law, obviously not written down, but the law is that the members of that group of piranha fish do not, as a general rule, eat or injure each other. If they did, the group of piranha fish would get smaller and smaller and smaller if there's only one left, and that's not a group.
Okay? Yep. Okay.
So that law must apply to any group of creatures. If it applies to piranha fish, I mean, they're the most voracious little creatures on the planet, as far as I know, one of them. most voracious. If it applies to them, it must apply to any group of creatures. And I'll extend that and say any group of creatures anywhere in the universe, at any time in any universe. If the members of a group start to eat or injure each other, as a general rule, that group will get smaller and smaller until there's only one left, which is not a group.
Okay.
So therefore, if there's a divinity which created the universe, it must be divine law, whatever kind of divinity it is. Whether it's one or a thousand, whether it's black or white or male or female or pink with blue spots, makes no difference. And if there's no divinity, that law exists anyway as a natural law. Members of a group do not, as a general rule, eat or injure each other.
I see. That law. Yeah, that okay. Law. The golden rule. Eat not your brother.
Or your sister.
Yeah, or your sister.
And don't give them a golden shower.
Although sometimes a nephew or niece might be a bit tasty. But go on.
Sorry, that was the previous show. I was overlapping there.
Yeah.
Right, so any reasonable person on this planet of any faith, including an atheist, and including anarchists, because they live in groups too. I've seen it with my own eyes. Any reason...
they live in little caves. What do you call a group of... Anyway, go on.
I don't know. Yeah. Any reasonable person of any faith on this planet has to agree, including an atheist, has to agree and say that it's true, or look silly, that members of a group don't eat or injure each other as a general rule.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So... all the world's religions have to agree, not might, could, should, ought to. They have to agree on this principle. And one of the main ways we are divided, or ruled rather, on this planet is by divide and rule. And one of the main instruments of divide and rule is religion. So this is a simple and direct remedy, irrefutable in any court of law in the world, or any religious court, which can easily remedy that issue of religious divide and rule. There is one law which we have to agree with, which is members of a group do not, as a general rule, eat or injure each other. And the way we're breaching this law as humanity is we are damaging and destroying the environment which we live in. So we can all unite on that principle, and it's a lawful principle. I can go now, that's natural law, and I can go now into present-day common law. In England, there is a duty of care. And it states, and it's Scotland as well, it states you must take reasonable care to avoid acts or omissions which you can reasonably foresee would be likely to injure your neighbour. Which is the same thing as saying members of a group don't eat or injure each other as a general rule.
Uh-huh.
Right? So this law, this duty of care, it's English law, it's British law, it is universal law. It's international law. I mean, I don't know the first thing about Chinese law, but I know for a fact pretty well that they live there in groups, so they have to obey it as well, or they couldn't be living there. So there are three ways to injure your neighbour. You can do it accidentally, knowingly, or intentionally, not counting acts of insanity. Accidentally is called negligence. It's not criminal to accidentally injure somebody. You pay compensation in a civil court. You're still responsible for your acts, but you're not criminal. If you do exactly the same thing knowingly, it then becomes criminal, which you can be arrested, in prison, fined, and have to pay damages. And if you intentionally injure your neighbour, that is seriously criminal. Extreme case of injuring somebody, which is to kill them, it's the difference between accidental killing, where there is no prison sentence, manslaughter, which is knowingly killing, which is a 5-year prison sentence, and murder, which is a life imprisonment, which is intentionally killing. Right, so you see how powerful this principle is. It's the difference between criminal and non-criminal behaviour. And it's the difference between lawful and unlawful behaviour as well. This duty of care, furthermore, apart from being the absolute foundation of all law, or all lawful law, rather, it will overturn any act of Parliament or previous case law. In fact, it is the principle according to which case law is created. And I can prove that in 2 minutes without a single textbook or anything else. Shall I go ahead?
Oh, God.
All right. Case of Michael Ryan. About 30 years ago in Hungerford, it was called the Hungerford Massacre. It was one of the first cases of someone going mad with a gun and shooting people in a public place. He shot about 15 people and then shot himself in the street in Hungerford. Now, imagine, say, you and I, Jay, were there, present on that day, heaven forbid, and he's on the other side of the street, he's got his gun out, he's shot a couple of people, he's aiming at a third one, and say one of us, say me, for example, has a gun in their pocket and a license to use it. I don't have a gun, I don't have a license, I don't want one. But if I did have, in that circumstance, I would get my gun out and I'd shoot him. And that would be a lawful act. So, taking it a little bit further, imagine now he's my twin brother and I can't shoot him. the next person he's going to shoot is your brother, your sister, your daughter, or your kid, or whatever, just to put it a personal note on it. You know I've got the gun. You know I'm not going to shoot him. And you don't have a license to use a gun. So what would you do in that circumstance? I would say, if you're, and you're an expert in martial arts, you're going to knock me on the head using reasonable force, take the gun off me and shoot him yourself. Now imagine if someone had done that in that circumstance. They could not be found guilty of a crime for doing so. You'd be taken to court and the charges would be assault and battery, theft of a firearm, unlawful possession and use, endangering public life, discharging a weapon in a public place and murder. And normally one would spend 30 years in prison for doing that. But in that circumstance, you'd not be found guilty of a crime. So what I'm saying to you is that the duty of care will overturn any act of parliament. If it'll overturn all those acts of parliament, which is assault and battery, theft of a firearm, unlawful possession and use, endangering public life and murder, if it'll overturn all those acts of parliament, it will overturn any other. And the Criminal Justice Act, the Public Order Act, the poll tax legislation, it is small fry compared to this principle of law.
All statutes, not statutes. Law.
Statutes are supposed to be, and the government is paid to enact the law, right? The government is paid through taxation to enact the law, and the government is subject to law, right? The government has knowingly, in other words, criminally, I'm not saying they're doing it intentionally, it's hard to prove intentional, but they certainly know that they've passed unlawful legislation allowing multinational companies to damage and destroy the planet to the extent that the threat of environmental damage is now as serious or worse than the threat of world war. It's a different quality of threat, but it's of a similar magnitude. I mean, just to prove that point, if I was to ask you which is more serious, the threat of environmental damage taken as a whole, not counting carbon dioxide, because that's a little rubbish argument, in my opinion, taken the environmental damage as a whole, or the threat of world war, which is more serious? Well, it's a difficult question to answer. And the reason there are two reasons it's difficult to answer, as far as I know. One is because they're very different, they're like chalk and cheese, and the other is because they're of a similar magnitude. If they were not of a similar magnitude, if one was obviously more serious than the other, then everybody would say, well, the threat of war is more serious. Or they would say, everybody would say the threat of environmental damage. But half and half say one or the other, and a lot of people say, I don't know. And people say it's difficult to answer what you're talking about. But the point is that they are of a similar magnitude. The threat of environmental damage and destruction on this planet is of a similar magnitude to a threat of world war. And the world's governments, plural, have knowingly passed unlawful legislation allowing that to happen. And which means they've acted knowingly, which means they're reckless and criminal. Furthermore, their world governments have also omitted to control the pollution and damage. If they hadn't omitted to control it, we wouldn't be in the mess we're in. So the world governments, in particular, I talk about UK government, but the world governments in general are reckless and criminal by act and omission in their duty of care for the environment. Okay? So it is unlawful to pay someone to commit crime. Right, whatever legislation they care to make up, saying it's illegal to not pay your tax, right, it is unlawful to pay someone to commit crime, regardless of whether there's some legislation that says you've got to pay tax or not. Right, so it is unlawful then to pay tax unless or until the world's governments stop being criminal. If the threat of environmental damage is as serious as the threat of world war, then the only way the world's governments can stop being criminal is by providing the same amount of resource for the environment as would be used to fight a world war. Which, as I would put it, is a global permaculture revolution. Tomorrow morning, start at 8 o'clock. Right, now that, if we were to have a world order, a new world order, I would say that is what we need. And the world governments then would be based on a talking circle rather than a ridiculous fixed hierarchy that we have. Any feedback on that for a minute? I'll catch my breath.
Well, do please. Do take some breaths. In my humble... The people who are doing the ecological damage and the people who are making the wars, they're all the same people. Each one is a different kind of harvest. And if you understand the kind of dark side of things, war is a harvest, you see? It's a harvest of souls, it's a harvest of negative energies. So there's interest in all sides of this. But, as far, you know, because what you're saying, it also applies galactically. This is like galactic law as well, because, you know, it doesn't matter what planet you're standing on, does it?
No, not at all. Exactly the point. It's a universal truth.
Yeah. So, it's, and like you say, you know, and again, I agree, that to pay taxes to an illegal government.
Unlawful.
Sorry, correct.
Unlawful.
Unlawful government. Yeah, I have to... See, this is the thing, right? I am lazy as heck, right? And that's why I never venture into this lawful legal stuff, because I have to think so sharply. It cuts my brain into pieces to think so hard like that. But okay. Anyway...
It is really simple, right? Reasonable behavior is not criminal.
Mm-hmm.
And if you knowingly or intentionally injure your neighbor, that is criminal.
Yeah.
That's
the difference. Like you said, there's like, you didn't notice, you don't care, right? And they hurt themselves, you know, your leather was rusty and they, you know, brushed them, you know, they get tetanus, right? Yeah. There's negligence. There's the heat of the moment. And then there's belligerence. There are different states in which people do acts upon each other, don't they?
Yes, exactly. That is why we have equity in the courts, because the common law, the original common law, was simply, in the case of stealing a sheep, you get your hand chopped off, whether you did it for kicks or because you hated the landlord or because you had 16 hungry children to feed. Whereas under equity, which... reforms and moderates the rigor and hard edge of the law where it's defective or weak in the constitution. That equity is a sense, is a sense of fairness.
Yeah, makes things fair. That's it.
Right. So the common law is a bit crude. It's like, but actually equity and the common law together, will overturn any act of parliament. Can you imagine this, right? Any contract to commit crime is a void contract, right? You can't have a lawful contract to commit crime. Any contract which is a contract to commit crime is unlawful.
Okay.
So if it's unlawful to commit unnecessary or unreasonable environmental damage and destruction, which it is, then any contract to damage or destroy the environment unnecessarily or unreasonably is an unenforceable contract. First of all, the mortgage contract. There are billions of people going to work every day now knowingly damaging and destroying the planet which they live on, their family live on, and their neighbour lives on. And if you don't carry on committing that crime, you can't pay a mortgage. Let's assume the people who are damaging the environment, which is builders, farmers, engineers, miners, fishermen, drivers, lumberjacks, mostly working class men. Let's assume that they have got a certain amount of common sense. And I base that assumption on the fact that anybody who is engaged in any of those trades would have had to have served some kind of an apprenticeship before they can be accepted as a working man in that trade. And it is mostly men. Right. And one of the main purposes of an apprenticeship is to find out who's got common sense. You can't have people without common sense on a building site or an engineering shop or a fishing boat or driving a lorry down the road. I professionally drive a recovery truck in London, picking up disabled buses when they break down. And I know for a fact I have to have common sense to do that job. You know, I have to have manners on the road with other drivers. I have to look out for cyclists. You know, there's a lot of different aspects of the common sense, but I have to have common sense. So all the people that are going to work destroying the planet have, by definition, have to have common sense. So if we ask a person with common sense, would you rather benefit the planet or destroy it, given the free choice? Well, it's a bit of a no-brainer, really. Anybody would rather benefit the planet. So, as I said just now, if you don't carry on destroying the planet, you can't pay your mortgage and your family's thrown out on the street. There's no employment available which will benefit the planet, or at least which doesn't damage it, which will pay the mortgage. There's none. If you're a teacher, you're teaching kids they've got to destroy the planet and they never get a job. If you're a doctor, you're fixing people after they've damaged themselves while destroying the planet so they can go back to work and do it some more. If you're a psychologist, you're trying to teach people or convince people it's sane to destroy the planet, and anyone who says otherwise is insane. It goes on. There's no employment available. So the mortgage contract, I'm saying, is unduly influencing and coercing billions of people to commit serious crime. In contract law, any contract unduly influencing or coercing a person to commit crime is a void contract and is unenforceable in law. So the mortgage contract's unenforceable. So all these houses that have been repossessed under this so-called austerity, which is created by the banks for the purpose of intentionally stealing people's houses, it's an unenforceable contract based on virtual money which doesn't exist, which was created out of fraud. Fractional reserve banking being a
slave system in the first place.
Well, it's not only a slave system, but it's a slave system which is destroying the environment we live in. I wouldn't mind too much being a slave if I was creating a beautiful place to live. But I object when it comes down to destroying the planet I live on. It's completely stupid. And not only is it stupid, it's unlawful and criminal because it's being done knowingly. Now, the police oath in the UK, they've changed it lately. I've been campaigning about this issue for nearly 40 years. And a police officer, when I was at the Twyford Down Road protest site, told me what the police oath is. And at that point in time, it was very simple. It was, and I quote, "I promise to protect life and property and to uphold the law," end of quote. Well, they've changed it a bit, but if you ask a police officer, what would he do if there was a threat to life and property? He said, well, I'm going to try and stop it. And if I can't stop it, I'll blow my whistle and call for assistance. And if there was a breach of the law, it's the same thing. So I think we can agree that the most serious threat to life and property on the planet is either environmental damage or a threat of world war, because they're of a similar magnitude and there's nothing greater than those two threats. And of those two threats, the actual threat of environmental damage is a real and present threat, where a world war might happen tomorrow, next week, 10 years down the line, might never happen, might be a distraction to distract us away from the actual real issue we need to be talking about. So the most serious threat to life and property on the planet is environmental damage. And in terms of law, there are billions of people knowingly going to work destroying the planet to the extent it's a serious threat of world war. It's the most serious breach of law as well. So therefore, every police officer should, according to law, be a committed environmental campaigner. Now, I've been talking to the police about this for 38 years in this country, and they all agree, without exception, that they would if they could, but they've got to do what they're told, they lose their job. And they're not very happy about it when you point out to them that they are protecting the lives and the property of the people who are destroying the planet that the police and their children live on. And they're upholding unlawful legislation made by a criminal government which allows the corporate entities to carry on doing that. I'm an environmental campaigner. As such, I am protecting life and property from the most serious threat to life and property and upholding the law from the most serious breach of the law. Now, what I would like to see in every city of the world, one particular day, I don't know when it could be, April the 1st this year, could be, is thousands and hundreds of thousands of people with a big banner which says the Green Movement, protecting life and property and upholding the law, marching towards their respective governments. And let's see what the police say when the governments say to the police, arrest them, put them back to work, destroying the planet. Because I know for a fact the police in this country, at least, because I've been educating them about this for 38 years, I know they'll say, I was going to swear then, I'll try not to, they'll say no.
Thank you for observing the FCC regulations.
But you get my drift, right? We can have a lawful revolution based on common law. Now, the free man on the land argument, people, and the maritime law and all this, it's a complete distraction. I was campaigning about this for years and years before that. I know all those people and they refuse to accept what I'm saying. But let's go to an example in legislation. The Criminal Damage Act, Section 1, is if you damage or destroy another person's property without a lawful excuse, you commit an offence. So what is a lawful excuse to damage or destroy another person's property? Example, house is on fire, you kick the door down to get someone out. That is a lawful act. It is illegal to kick someone's door down, but it's lawful to do it in that circumstance. It is illegal to knock someone on the head, steal a gun and shoot somebody in a public place, but it's lawful to do it in the circumstance of Michael Ryan shooting people in the street in Hungerford. You see how simple, utterly simple this is. A 10-year-old child can understand this information. You don't need any textbooks. You don't need any references, right? It doesn't matter when I kick that door down or knock someone on the head and steal a gun, whether I've got capital letters in my birth certificate or not, whether I've got... doesn't make any difference, right? It's irrelevant, all that stuff they talk about. This information will overturn the world's governments and the criminal cabal and put them all in the FEMA camps overnight.
So, when did you start?
Well, we have to make the information public, otherwise people can't act on it.
You just did.
Well, I'm trying.
You just did. So, because, you know, it's, the thing is, like, the whole getting people to understand, this is where, you know, let me just say, this is where my radio journey started. Because I was looking, I was going to, somebody said, do you want to do a radio show? And I said, maybe. He said, people like your voice. I said, all right then. Now, this is years ago. And it was the first thing that I did was to talk to a fellow about the TV license, right. And the concepts that he brought up really started every week. He did seven shows, and he sort of started with the TV license and went all the way into a lot of what you were just talking about and the whole lawful, legal understanding and policeman, police officer. Police constable dichotomy thing, which saved my ass once or twice very well. And, the entire understanding of what the fraud, let's say, of law of what we call law is. Do you want to talk a bit about that? Because, you know, you've obviously delved down in the dark side. You've seen the dirty, sneaky tricks that the powers that be, whack on to people who want to make the world a better place, haven't you? Tell us about them.
Fraud in law is pretending something is something which it's not in order to gain financially or to make someone else lose financially. Right, so let's talk about the biggest fraud on the planet, which is known as fractional reserve banking. I'm going to pretend to be Nathan Rothschild now for a few minutes. 200 odd years ago when they started, sometime before the Napoleonic Wars. And I've got a lump of gold and I put it on my table and I open my door and I've opened my bank and someone comes in the bank and they want to borrow that piece of gold to open a factory in the area and bring employment and prosperity to the area. I say, yeah, sure, you can borrow the bit of gold, but if you take it out of here, someone's going to steal it off you. It's heavy to carry around. It's very inconvenient. What I'll do, I'll write you a note, send it to your bit of gold, and I'll charge you 10% per annum to borrow it. We agree, and I write the piece of paper. I lock the piece of gold in the safe deposit box inside my safe, and I give the person the key to the safe deposit box and the piece of paper we both signed. The person goes off to the builder, who's going to build the factory, gives the paper and the key to the builder, and the builder builds the factory. The factory opens. I'm getting my 10%, everyone's happy. I'm sat in my bank, a bit bored one day, someone else comes in the bank, they want to borrow a bit of gold. Well, I've only got the one bit of gold. But I know the first person's only going to come in once a week, so I make a private appointment for the second person to come back and discuss the issue. And the second person comes, because I can't have all the people coming, you know, more than, if they both come in the bank one day and there's only one bit of gold, I'm in trouble. So the second person comes in on another day, to a private appointment. Incidentally, when you make a private appointment to see your bank manager, you put your suit and tie on, you think, oh, you're all important to go and see the bank manager. It's not for your privacy, it's for the bank's privacy. As I said, they can't have 10,000 people come into bank one day and there's only one bit of gold and they're all paying 10% to borrow it. So they found they could write 10 pieces of paper for each piece of gold. Again, there are videos all over the internet about this and it is so utterly simple.
You can check out Bill Still. He was the guy that really turned me onto it.
Even he is making it far too complicated.
I'm
going to explain it to you in terms that a 10-year-old child can understand.
Okay, keep going.
10-year-old children. Right. So they found they could write 10 pieces of paper for each piece of gold. 10 pieces of paper, each earning 10% per annum. 10 times 10% per annum is 100% per annum. In other words, by the end of 1 year, I've got the original piece of gold and I've got 10 pieces of paper together, the equivalent wealth of another piece of gold, right?
Yep. Sometimes that's it. So,
so as long as you believe in those bits of paper, I can swap those pieces of paper for another bit of gold. So now I've got two bits of gold. Now I can write 10 pieces of paper on each piece of gold. 100% plus another 100%, I've got another two pieces of gold. In other words, it's doubled. Now I've got four pieces of gold. Now I can write 10 pieces of paper on each of those, four pieces of gold. After another year, each one of them's doubled. Now I've got eight pieces of gold. Are you with me?
I'm still here. I think
it's doubling every year. That is an exponential curve, right? So after 1 year, I've got 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, 128, 256, 512, 1024. That's after 10 years, right? Call it 1,000, keep it simple. If I start with 1, after 10 years, I've got 1,000. If I start with that 1,000, after another 10 years, I've got 1,000 times that, which is 1,000,000 after 20 years. Just to get an idea of how big 1,000,000 is, how big is 1,000,000 millimeters? It is a kilometer. 1 kilometer. 1 kilometer worth of millimeters, that's how many bits of gold I've got after 10 years. After 20 years. The first 10 years is 1,000, next 10 years is 1,000 times that. The third 10 years is 1,000 times 1,000,000. 1,000,000,000 after 30 years.
Yeah, it's now starting to get ridiculous and, it's the exponential problem.
Can I just continue this a little bit?
Keep going.
After 30 years, so 10 years is 1,000, 20 years is 1,000 times 1,000, which is 1,000,000. 30 years is 1,000,000,000. And 40 years is 1,000 times 1,000 times 1,000,000, which is 1,000,000 times 1,000,000, which is an English billion. Apologies to the Americans listening, but the American or even Europeans, the American or European billion is only 1,000,000,000, but the English billion is 1,000,000 times 1,000,000. It's 1,000 times bigger. Sorry about that. It's my little joke. 1,000,000 times 1,000,000. How big is that? Well, if you imagine 39,000 years, every second in time for 39,000 years, that's about 1,000,000 seconds, 39,000 years. of seconds after 40 years banking. That's how many bits of gold I've got. The next year it doubles, and I started 200 odd years ago. So now all these allegations that the Rothschilds own every national bank in the world, apart from three now, I believe, start to make some sense. But that is a simple fact of how they've done it. Now, they could not possibly have manufactured that amount of gold that I'm talking about. I mean, even after 40 years or 50 years, you know, I mean, that's an incredible amount of gold. Or, you know, there isn't that amount of gold probably, I don't know, over 200 years in the universe. But what they've done effectively is they've created an infinite supply of money out of nothing through fraud. Fraud, as I say, being pretending something is simple, which is not, in order to gain financially or to make someone else lose financially. Or pretending a bit of gold is more bits of gold than it is pretending something is something which is not. Lending out and charging interest, the banks are gaining and everybody else is losing at a phenomenal rate. So what I'm saying to you is that all the money, and we left the gold standard, by the way, when Rothschild wrote the first time Rothschild wrote more pieces of paper than he got gold. That's when we left the gold standard. It's all this nonsense about Clinton and Nixon and Margaret Thatcher and leaving the gold standard just recently. It's a complete load of nonsense. Right? We left the gold standard, as I said, when Rothschild wrote more bits of paper than he got gold. So they created an infinite supply of money out of fraud. Now, fraud is a crime in common law. And under the Proceeds of Crime Act 2002, the proceeds of crime are recoverable through the courts. Now, they've lent every single piece of currency out at interest. And according to that, it seems it still technically belongs to them. Well, we can take it all off of them and put it in the public purse and use it to finance a global state of emergency for the environment and have plenty of change left over. So that's the economic aspect of the global state of emergency dealt with in logic which a 10-year-old can understand. My test of my argument is it's got to be able to be understood by a 10-year-old and it's got to stand up in any high court in the world.
All right, so here's another little challenge for your 10-year-old explanation. How are war and banks connected?
Right, well, if it's true that the Rothschilds own every national bank in the world apart from three, then any country that goes to war has to borrow money from its national bank. So in other words, the Rothschilds have been financing both sides of every war, almost every war, since Napoleon. That's something like 250 million deaths.
That's right.
Not counting children, that's just honest patriotic service.
So it's not warlords. It's not right or wrong.
No. This is global genocide of the Goyim by the Rothschilds.
But not only that. They have insurance taken out on every single one of those people that they've had killed.
How do you mean?
Well, I think they call it peasant policy. There's something like, is that kind of peasant policy or something. That basically if, you know, a farm worker dies on your farm, you can afford to, you know, bury them and give them the family some money. But, these policies still exist and, they're used by the governments. This is how they do the whole national security. You know, here's the thing. National security, right? It's securities as in securities and exchanges, not as in security guards.
Well, it's a myth, national security. While these Rothschilds are in control of what's going on, there is no national security.
Well, here's the thing. The national security is the insurance policy that is taken out on every single human in the country. That's what the national security is. Do you see what I'm saying? It's a security, it's a bond taken out on the nation.
Okay, but I don't know.
We're told, you know, national security, and we imagine that national security means keeping the security of, you know, like people being secure and happy and content. But that I don't believe that the word security is used in that context. I believe it's security as in bond. But anyway, right. It's just my interpretation of things. I might be wrong. I'm usually wrong, even though I sometimes come out right. I say things and sometimes in like a year or so they, ooh, you were right. Yeah, but nobody ever tells me that. I have to remind people because you know what it's like.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
Yeah. Well, but anyway.
Masons, right?
Masons. Meanwhile, back at... Hang on.
Meanwhile, at stately Wayne Manor...
Which was built by Masons. Anyway, go on, tell us about Masons.
A Mason's a builder, right? Someone who works with stone. Generally stone.
Correct.
And let's say we've got 30 people on a building site working together, building a building, which is going up high. They've got to know what they're doing, or it's going to fall down, and or someone's going to get hurt or killed. It's a dangerous place on a building site. Okay? Now, the only way to get to know what you're doing on a building site is to serve an apprenticeship. You have to have practical hands-on experience. You can't go to college. You can't go learn it in a book. You can't be told. You have to do it with your bare hands and your eyes. You gain hand and eye experience. And as I said earlier, you gain a certain degree of common sense. If you haven't got common sense, you're not going to pass your apprenticeship. Simple as that. It can't be done. You can't have people without common sense working on the building site. It's a menace to everybody. So you serve your apprenticeship. You're accepted into the local lodge as a mason. You serve time as a mason. You're good enough. You become a master mason, at which point in time you have apprentices under you. You serve time as a master mason, you're good enough to become a Freemason. There's a hierarchy there based on wisdom and experience, right? Where even if you hate the person above you in the hierarchy, at least you respect them because they've been there, done that, and got the t-shirt. Well, that's how it used to be. And the masons then in those days were, it was not only stonemasons, but wheelwrights, shipwrights, farmers, engineers, you know, anything that's going to get built or transported or anything else like that. It's done according to the wind and the tide with a good deal of common sense by the masons. So they were very, very powerful. And the Rothschilds, making all this money out of nothing, obviously they wanted to get into the level of Masons at the Freemason level, and they didn't want to serve an apprenticeship. So there was a battle for 200-something years between the Masons and the bankers. And in 1742, I think it was, in York, the bankers won by some kind of chicanery. You know, they blackmailed or lied the way in, or somehow or another they got in, and two persons were accepted as Freemasons who had not served an apprenticeship. And since that day, there's been two kinds of Freemasons. It's what you call practicing Freemasons, who've served an apprenticeship and worked their way up in the old-fashioned way with common sense, and there's what you call accepted or speculative Freemasons who have not. And nowadays, I don't know what the percentage is, but it's probably 90% of Freemasons are accepted or speculative Freemasons. They haven't served an apprenticeship. They've got no common sense. I bet they couldn't even make a cup of tea between them, let alone fix a slate on a roof. And the only power they have is through the media, which they on paper own, and the police and the armed forces, which obey them until the police and the armed forces and the intelligence services, don't forget them, wake up to what's been going on. Now, the intelligence services have been killing and torturing each other to death over military secrets, right, because of these Rothschilds for the last 200 years. And they're waking up to how they've been duped into killing and torturing each other. That's honest, patriotic people from Russia, America. Look at the Russian Revolution. The Tsar of Russia was approached by the Rothschilds, who wanted to open a bank in his country, bring in prosperity and open factories and everything. He said no. And they said, we're going to get you. And they, with the help of the Eastern European Bolshevik so-called Jews, the false Jews, the synagogue of Satan, as we know them, invaded Russia, killed 20-odd million people in the name of communism, which is supposed to be for the people. I mean, how on earth killing 20 million Russian people is in favour of the people, I do not know. But anyway, they did, and then they killed the Russian Tsar and his family in cold blood. And then they started the Russian Communist Party, which was 95% Eastern European false Jews. They're not Semitic, so don't have any fear of being accused of being anti-Semitic. They are not Semites. The Semites are the Arabs who live in that area. The most anti-Semitic people on the planet are the Israeli army, killing all the Semitic Arabs. But anyway, the Russian Bolshevik Jews governed the Russian Communist Party, which in turn governed the Russian press, the media. And the Russian media was dedicated to telling all the Russian people that America was full of evil capitalist people. At the exact same time, the American media, also owned by the Rothschilds, was telling the American people that Russia is full of evil communist people. And you had this Cold War going on ever since. And Trump, I think, is about to blow the whistle on it. I am very hopeful. Well, he's come out against the pharmaceuticals. He's come out against, what else did he come out against just now? Something else, I forgot. He's yet to come out against fracking. That's another issue, fracking. I mean, that actually, fracking is the most imminent and real and present danger to the environment. And I could say that, again, 10-year-old logic. When they drill a hole for fracking, they drill the hole and they drop a steel pipe down the hole. And the object of the steel pipe is to convey the oil and or gas up the pipe to be taken away and processed and used and sold. Well, what happens is that they have to drill the hole. It has to be slightly bigger than the steel pipe, and it's about an inch and a half all the way around the outside of the steel pipe. That is that gap. I mean, if the hole was the same size as the steel pipe, dropping that steel pipe down the hole, it would get stuck. So there has to be a clearance, and it's about an inch and a half, as I say, all the way around. And that gap around the outside is called the annulus. In England, Britain, where they're fracking, they want to frack 60% of this area, 60% of the area of this country, according to the maps I've seen from the government. And of that area, 95% of it, they're drilling through the aquifers. So they drill down, they go down through the aquifer, it makes it all muddy for a couple of days, that's not a problem, the mud's not toxic. They go down, they hit the oil and the gas. Now they're going down a kilometre or so, and imagine the weight of rock sitting on top of that oil and gas. The pressure down there is enormous. And so the oil and the gas shoots up that hole like nobody's business, and you get an oil geyser or a gas flare. It's because of the weight of the rock pressing down on it, which you've just punctured a hole into it, it's going to shoot up that hole until it stops coming up that hole. So they drop the steel pipe down the hole. Now, obviously, that oil and gas is not only going to go up the middle of the pipe, it's where it's meant to go, it's going to go up the outside of the pipe. And if you've gone through the aquifer, it's going to go straight in the aquifer. Well, they try and stop it. They don't want the oil going in, or gas going in the aquifer, not because they care about the aquifers, but because they want it to go up the centre of the pipe where they can sell it. So what they do, they pump a special kind of cement, very liquid cement, down the middle of that pipe. And it gets to the bottom, it turns around the corner, and it comes back up the sides. I'm just talking about the vertical part of the well now, never mind the horizontal part. This is just the vertical part. The horizontal part is even worse, but this is just the vertical part of any well, whether it's conventional or fracking, for oil or gas, any well they drill, this is the same process. So they pump this cement down the middle of the pipe, it gets to the bottom, it turns around the corner, it comes back up the sides, it's supposed to set and form a perfect seal and stop the oil and gas going up the outside of the pipe and getting in the aquifer or getting into the atmosphere or anywhere else. They don't want it going there. They want it going in the middle of the pipe. Well, that cement seal fails. It fails at a known rate. 5%, 1 in 20 of them, fail immediately. 10% have failed after a year. And 60% have failed after 20 years. And they will all fail eventually. And the reason they will all fail eventually is because the steel will go rusty, the cement will deteriorate, there's earth movements, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's a very high pressure environment down there. You know, that cement's going to fail. So 60% of the country at a certain number of wells per square mile, I've worked it out, it comes out at roughly 480,000 holes. Well, obviously they won't be able to drill 480,000 holes. There'll be mountains in the way, there'll be houses, et cetera. So let's say they drill 400,000 holes, right? Of that, 5% will fail immediately. 5% of 400,000 holes is 20,000 holes. Will fail immediately. That cement seal will fail immediately as soon as they've drilled 20,000 of those holes. After 1 year, 10% of 400,000 is 40,000 will have failed after 10 years, and 60%, 6 fours are 24, that's 240,000 wells will fail, their cement seal will fail after 20 years. So after 20 years, 240,000 wells will be leaking oil and gas into the UK aquifers essentially forever. That fact is known by Cameron, it is known by the frackers, it is known by the hierarchy of the anti-fracking movement, including the climate change lobby, who persist in talking a load of hot air about carbon dioxide. I'm not saying climate change isn't happening, but it's nothing to do with carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide is a product of climate change, it's not a cause, and I can prove that as well. This fact, right, there's a quote, if I just very quickly go to my, I've got a page on Facebook called Fracking Aquifers, which is all about this issue and related parts to it. I'm just trying to find it. Hang on 2 seconds. I want to read a quote to you from an article that was written in, I think, 2003. Here it is, in The Guardian, written about New York, right, about the aquifer, about the drinking supply and of the effect of aquifers on the water supply in New York. Here it comes, I'm just getting it. Right. A former staffer at a state government agency responsible for regulating hydraulic fracturing or fracking has warned that allowing the controversial gas drilling method in New York would lead to contamination of the state's aquifers and would poison its drinking water. I'll miss a bit of it out and I'll go down to the actual quote.
Meanwhile, you can take a breath. We're going to actually, listen, we're going to have to take your time because we're going to, the heartbreakers are going to start in a minute.
Less than 10 seconds, right?
All right, go on.
Not might contaminate our aquifers. Hydraulic fracturing will contaminate New York's aquifers. If you were looking for a way to poison the drinking water supply here in the Northeast, you couldn't find a more chillingly effective and thorough method of doing so than with hydraulic fracturing.
We'll join you on the other side. Hang by and listen to these people shouting. Enjoy.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
The wave of paradigm washes over us. The winds of change, a fickle mistress. This, the truth in plain sight. The only true wisdom is in knowing you know nothing.
Socrates.
This is C. Travesty. I am the ghost in the machine. This world, this life, is the great mystery. You are broken down to be rebuilt anew. Deep insight deconstructed for you. Ghost in the Machine with C. Travesty. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. to 6 Eastern Time, Studio B, 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 B.
Join the Sacred Matrix with hosts Janet Kirilesson and Dr. Sasha Lesson, 6 p.m. Eastern Time here on Revolution Radio.
Here we free ourselves from the God spell, transform the perverted matrix to the divine one. We become conscious and we embrace universal unlimited love.
We feature colorful guests and topics such as extraterrestrials, ghosts, interdimensionals, and aliens. We examine evidence, anomalies, archaeological ruins, and anthropology.
We explore past lives, future lives, life between lives. We get into astral projection, near-death experiences, archetypes, visions, and dreams.
Episodes include time travel, teleportation, counseling, spirituality, tantra, relationships, peace, shamanism, peak experiences, and ego transcendence.
Join the lessons Saturday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com for The Sacred Matrix, a divine paradigm of love.
Oscar's freeze. That's his cerebral cortex looking for an answer it doesn't have.
See? Even your brain knows you're screwed.
The body's filling with adrenaline right now. Whether you know it or not, the heart's beating faster. It's getting a little harder to breathe. The neurobiological system is telling it to run, but your knees are too weak to move.
Fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. Do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. 100% listener-supported radio. Reporting from danger. Unafraid. Right here, where information never sleeps. Revolution. Radio!
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent news story, and I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
On the go? Still want to listen? Don't have one of those fancy phones with too many buttons? Don't know what an app is? Or you don't even care? Well, we got you here at Revolution Radio. Now you can dial in 24-7 to listen to our shows. We have a number for Studio A and Studio B, and best of all, it's free. Don't forget, carrier charges for your cell phone provider may apply, though, so check with your cell provider to make sure. So ready? Here you go. Get a pen. Here's the number. 2-432-6958, and Studio B is 716-748-0112. Thank you very much for listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station in the world. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
So, meanwhile, here on Journeys, we've got two English fellows talking about the law. So, is that other English fellow still there?
He is. Could talk?
You are. Good. That's good.
I'd like to tell a little story.
So, can you do that last 10 second piece? Because as I said, as I predicted, because I've been doing this a lot, as I predict, the break music comes in and it walks right over what you say.
Okay.
So, you have to say it again because nobody heard it. So go once again on that final break.
This is in The Guardian. I can't put the link. I should have put the link, but I can't do it right now, but I will. A former staffer at a state government agency responsible for regulating hydraulic fracking, or fracking, has warned that allowing the controversial gas drilling method in New York would lead to contamination of the state's aquifers and would poison its drinking water. These stark warnings, issued by Paul Hetzler in a letter to an upstate newspaper, came as a current employee and union representative at the Department of Environmental Conservation sounded alarm bells over the understaffed agency's ability to monitor the industry and to deal with any emergencies if the plan goes ahead. And from that letter, I quote, "Not might contaminate our aquifers. Hydraulic fracturing will contaminate New York's aquifers. If you are looking for a way to poison the drinking water supply here in the Northeast, you couldn't find a more chillingly effective and thorough method of doing so than with hydraulic fracturing." Right? That's drilling through the aquifers, and the reason for it is because of the failure rate of the cement seal that I was explaining earlier. There are reasons why that cement seal fails. And the first reason, and the most obvious really, is that going down through a kilometre of rock, you're going through maybe 100 different kinds of rock. And this cement is supposed to stick equally well to 100 different kinds of rock with different porosity, different pH values, different properties of various different kinds, and to steel forever, right? Well, there's no kind of cement will do that. That's the first reason. The second reason is, on the way down, you know, there are other rocks, layers, other strata of rock which have fluids in them, either oil or gas or other fluids, which are also under high pressure. And as soon as you punch that hole down through there, those fluids are going to be leaking into that that well cavity at high pressure. So this liquid cement, which is passing up that outside the annulus of the well, the gap between the sides of the well bore and the steel pipe, the outside of the steel pipe, that cement is going to be mixed with whatever fluids are being injected into that space. So it cripples the cement. Thirdly, when that cement reaches the bottom of the hole, what does it encounter? It encounters high pressure oil and gas. So before it even turns the corner, or as it's turning the corner at the bottom of the hole, it is mixed with high pressure oil and gas. That cement is never going to work. When it does work, it's quite amazing that it works as much as it does. And I mean, if those are industry figures that I quoted, which was 5% fails immediately, 10% fails after a year, and 60% fail after 20 years, those are industry figures. You can guarantee it's going to be a lot worse than that. And I didn't even mention the leaks on the horizontal part of the well. They've found, after drilling, they found gas leaking into streams 3,000 feet away from the nearest well. Now that isn't coming from the vertical part of the well, that's coming from the horizontal part of the well. And if it's leaking up through a stream 3,000 feet away, that's the only place where you can see it, right? Because it's bubbling up through the water. But obviously it's going to be leaking up at anywhere between the well and 3,000 feet away. That is known, right? It could be leaking anywhere, and the whole forest, the whole floor of the land is going to have gases leaking up through it once you fracture and drill horizontally through it and fracture the rocks down below. Any fault line, you know, any earth movements, that oil and gas is going to be leaking, which explains why cattle are dying, people are dying, people are getting nosebleeds and all the rest of the diseases that have been well publicised in Josh Fox's films. So this is a lethal process. It's actually lethal, and it isn't known about. A little story I wanted to tell was last on November the 5th in London. There's a annual march in many countries of the world, but in London, the November the 5th, the Anonymous crew gather in Trafalgar Square and process to Parliament Square, and then process to Buckingham Palace and fireworks at Buckingham Palace, which is quite amusing. There's videos. So if you type into YouTube fireworks at Buckingham Palace, you'll see anarchists firing fireworks at Buckingham Palace, actually hitting the palace and exploding in sparks on the wall. And the police are looking on with their arms folded going, can't do much about that. It's hilarious. Anyway, I went there not this last November the 5th, just over a year ago. The previous year to that, I went and I enjoyed the fireworks. The last year, which wasn't just now, but a year ago, I decided not to go to Buckingham Palace, and I decided to stay at the House of Parliament because there was 300 odd police officers in uniform guarding it and preventing us from going in there and making citizens' arrests on the criminals inside. So I thought I'd address the police about these issues. And there was a line of them, and I stood in front of them where they could all see me, and I said at the top of my voice, "I've just captured 300 Metropolitan Police officers without a single pair of handcuffs. And how did I do that? Because you lot have got to stand there and listen to me. And why are you going to listen to me? Because I'm going to talk to you about the law. Now, why would I talk to 300 Metropolitan Police officers about the law? Because I know for a fact you don't know about the law. And how do I know that? Because I've been talking to the police in this country for 38 years about the law. I know for a fact you don't know about the law. But I'll tell you what, in 20 minutes you will know." Right? And I proceeded to explain exactly what I've explained here, including the fracking bit. And I got to a bit about fracking, and I said to the assembled police officers, I said, "And that ... swear word, Cameron, knows this, and he's going around the country and telling everybody it's perfectly safe." And at that point, a sergeant came out from the ranks of the police with his machine gun across his chest and a camera in his lapel. And he leaned over to me. He's quite a big lad, and he's probably an ex-Marine or something. He said, "Excuse me, sir." He said, "We are listening to you. We're very interested in what you're saying. We'd like you to carry on, but please, sir, don't swear. There's children present." I said, "I'll do my best, officer." And I carried on. And, well, that was me talking to 300 armed Metropolitan Police officers a year ago, right, on camera. They all had cameras in their lapels, right? So I know for a fact, as near as I can know anything, I know for a fact that the police in this country support what I'm saying. And all it takes now is for enough people to know this information and to challenge the police. Now, how do we challenge the police on this issue? Right, we do it in a very friendly way, right? I'm saying the government is criminal and it's unlawful to pay someone to commit crime. And if you knowingly pay someone to commit crime, it's criminal, right? So anyone who pays tax and who knows that the government is criminal, they know that they're paying someone to commit crime, which makes them a criminal. Anyone who's paying tax to the government, knowing the government is criminal, is committing crime. And so anybody, in common law, if you believe that another person has committed, is committing, or is about to commit a crime, you can make a citizen's arrest, and you're allowed to use reasonable force to do so. So anyone who's paying tax can be citizen's arrested. Well, we all pay tax. Anytime you buy something in a shop, you're paying VAT. So it doesn't have to be income tax. It could be any kind of tax, right? So anybody in this culture is subject to citizen's arrest once they know the government is criminal and they know they're paying someone to commit crime. So we could have demonstrations outside every police station on a coordinated day. There's umpteen ways of achieving this. All it needs is publicity. We could have groups of people going to their local police station, all citizens arresting each other on the grounds of vicarious responsibility, which is the vicarious responsibility of a master for the act of a servant. The government are civil servants. We are their masters. We're paying them to commit crime. We have a responsibility not to pay them to commit crime. Right. So, and if we knowingly pay them to commit crime, we are knowingly paying them to commit the crime. And the actual crime we're paying them to commit is, I mentioned earlier Section 1 of the Criminal Damage Act, which is damage or destroy another person's property without lawful excuse. Well, Section 1.2 of the Criminal Damage Act is called aggravated criminal damage. Now, in any criminal offence, there are aggravating features and mitigating features. In the sense of, like, earlier talking about stealing sheep, aggravating features, well, I did it because I like stealing sheep, or, you know, I don't care. But a mitigating feature would be, I've got 1,600 hungry children to feed. I run an orphanage, or, you know, whatever that could be. Right, that would be mitigating features in the common law and in equity. So aggravated criminal damage, the aggravating feature is the endangerment of life. And the offence is as follows. You commit an offence if you damage or destroy any property. It doesn't matter whose it is. The other, Section 1 is another person's property. It doesn't matter whose property it is in Section 1.2. Damage or destroy any property with intent to endanger life, or knowing life would be endangered. If I run a building firm and I've got a ladder and I damage my ladder and then send somebody up that ladder intending to endanger their life, that's my ladder, I've damaged it, but the endangerment of life means I've committed aggravated criminal damage, and the fact I did it intending to endanger someone's life means that I'm subject to maximum life imprisonment. Right? If I knew the ladder was dodgy and I sent them up there anyway, that would be reckless, that would be manslaughter, which would be 5 years. And if I had the ladder tested and it's got a test certificate on the side of it, and my employee went up the ladder and fell off and broke their neck as a result, that's not my fault. You know, I'd still have to pay damages, which is why I have to pay, that's why I have to have public liability insurance, because I wouldn't be able to pay those damages. You know, if somebody broke their neck and spent the rest of their life in a wheelchair, I could never pay hundreds of thousands of pounds of damages for that person. So that's why it's criminal not to have public liability insurance. Well, that's the ideal thing of it. The insurance company is obviously ripping everybody off in lots of different ways, but in essence, that's the reason to have insurance. So, aggravated criminal damage. Damage or destroy any property with intent or knowing life would be endangered. So any property then in this context is the earth. It's being damaged and destroyed. Life is being endangered. And it's being done knowingly by 6 to 7 billion people. So that's the most serious threat to life and property and the most serious breach of law. That is the crime which the mortgage contract is forcing people to commit. And that is the crime which we are paying the government to be accessories before, during and after the fact to that crime. So it's very serious. So we all make citizens' arrests on each other outside the local police station for accessory before, during and after the fact of aggravated criminal damage. And we do the paperwork. I mean, to make a citizen's arrest, there is no set form of making a citizen's arrest. I mean, if someone's attacking someone with an axe, what are you supposed to do? Is there a set form? Are you supposed to fill out forms before you use reasonable force to stop that person? No, the only set form is that you're allowed to use reasonable force. Well, if we've got a whole bunch of people, all citizens arresting each other, the intention is to make the issue of law public, then we're not committing a crime.
All being reasonably forceful.
Well, we don't even have to force each other. We were all volunteering to arrest each other. That's the whole point, right? So, but it's going to create one big headache for the police. And at that point, if we did a coordinated action on that issue or another issue, that could be that one, could be fracking, could be lots of different things, right? The police would then be forced to make a statement on the issue of the law. And the statement would, they'd either have to say, well, we are content to carry on upholding unlawful legislation made by a criminal government allowing multinational companies to damage and destroy the planet which we, the police, and our children live on. They'd have to either have to say that, or they'd have to say, no, we're not happy with this and we want something to change. And we'd have our lawful revolution. I know the police and the armed forces in this country, at least, right, are behind what I'm saying, and the secret services. This thing about they're listening to us. I hope they are listening. I hope they're paying attention. I hope they're writing notes. And I hope they're passing the information on to their friends. Because as soon as the intelligence services realise what's going on, they are going to arrest the bankers because they know where they live. And those bankers, one night, one day, bit of chloroform, they're all going to end up in the FEMA camps. And another thing, if you do a little pie graph of a person's wages, to put a circle and cut it in three, one third is tax, one third is mortgage or rent, and the other third is spend in the shop. The tax, right? This country, we are paying £1 billion a week in interest on our national debt to the Bank of England, which is owned by the Rothschilds. £1 billion a week. That's £50 billion a year. Well, the entire budget for the National Health Service is £120 billion. So, you know, that easily would fund the National Health Service, the Fire Service, and all the other things, the housing we need. It would feed everybody in the country, you know, just that part of the interest, right? So out of the mortgage or the rent, how much, if you borrow £100,000 over 30 years, how much are you going to pay back? You're going to pay back £150,000. So one third of the mortgage or the rent, if you're paying rent, you're paying someone else's mortgage. One third of your rent or your mortgage is paying interest to the banks, right? Probably a half of your tax is paying interest. £50 billion. I don't know what, I haven't actually looked to find out what the present income of the government is through income tax, but probably half of it is paying interest to the banks. Now, take the last third, which I don't pay tax. I'm below the tax threshold and I don't pay rent. I'm lucky enough to live in my truck on a yard, the same yard where the recovery truck is, which I drive. But nonetheless, if I go in a shop and buy a China cup, someone has borrowed the money to buy the land to dig the China clay up from, and they're paying interest on that capital loan, and I'm paying the interest on that capital loan out of the price of that cup. Someone has then borrowed the money to buy a huge great big digger to dig the China clay up from, and they're paying interest on that loan, and I'm paying the interest on that capital loan out of the price of that cup. Someone's borrowed the money to buy an even bigger lorry for the digger to put the China clay into to take it to the China clay factory. Someone's borrowed the money to set up a China clay factory. Someone's borrowed the money to buy another lorry to take the China clay to the cup factory. Someone's borrowed the money to set up the cup factory. Someone's borrowed the money to buy another lorry to take the cups to the wholesaler, to set up the wholesaler, another lorry to take the cups to the retailer, and set up the retailer. All those capital loans, I'm paying interest on all those capital loans at the price of that cup. I'm also paying interest on the mortgages of all the people that work for all those companies. I'm also paying interest on the national debt, again, out of their tax. Right? So then, out of your tax, you're also paying interest on the all the capital loans and the mortgages of all the people that work for them, of all the companies that work as subcontractors for the government. All the quangos, all those different companies, right, that are working for the government, you're paying all that capital. So at least 50% of your tax, at least a third of your mortgage, and probably at least half of everything you spend in the shop is paying interest to the banks. Now, that is as a direct result of usury, charging interest on a loan of money. The money does not exist. It's virtual money. 99% of the money in the world is virtual money in a computer. It is of no real consequence whatsoever. On that basis, there is no real economic reason for anything whatsoever. For example, there is no real economic reason why we cannot feed, clothe, house, educate, and employ every single person on this planet and be totally eco-friendly right now. And the only reasons we are given why we cannot do those things are economic reasons. We have the technology, we have the resources. It is simply a matter of economics why we cannot do those things. And the economics, there is no economic argument. The money does not exist and it was created out of fraud.
Well, you know, what you're talking about, the economics is really a fraud in itself, because economic circumstances are caused by bankers with a turning the tap, whether it's, you know, to conservative or liberal. They just have a, they just change the interest rate, and that's the, that, I mean, what they've basically done is to find the sweet spot, as it were, of human productivity. And they have managed to find a way of working us just about hard enough so that we can, they can squeeze us hard and, emit this little juice, our little working lives. And, you know, aggregate that together to make their trillions and trillions, and also hypothecate, as you say, through in, through the use of usury or interest charging, to hypothecate themselves identical clones of that original lump of gold. But it's all a fraud. It's all just saying my piece of paper is worth something because you can trust me, because I've got a big, heavy guy here who's going to beat up anybody who will disagree, especially you. This is that's the whole thing. It's really based on the force of domination.
Truly. But the fact is that the heavy guy lives on the same planet and so do his kids.
Draconian system.
The heavy guy lives on the same planet and so do his kids. Right? That's where we got him. It's common law. It's common to everybody on the planet. We all need a healthy planet. No matter rich, poor, black, white, Catholic, Protestant, Muslim, male, female, young or old, we all need a healthy planet.
Exactly. So, we get rid of the bankers.
Yeah.
Because because the bankers are not really just doing banks. They're essentially strip mining the world of energy in the form of our anguish and our rage. By harvesting war and, you know, wasting an awful lot of our energy, just wasting it, just like burning it off.
Move you mean our psychic and emotional energy, mental energy?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I agree.
And then, you know, on the other end of that, you know, there's the work energy that they get out of us, you know, little like, treadmill kind of things. Feeding the machine, that sort of thing. God, what a great show. This is Blue Monday. This is perfect. It is real depressive stuff. It's like, anyway.
No, there's a positive outcome.
Yeah.
Global permaculture.
Global permaculture, Ubuntu. Well, I mean, really, I would like an Ubuntu economic system, which is, you know, essentially it's, you don't need to worry about money. There's always enough, basically. There's always plenty. If you've got a big project, then, you know, you get other people interested and, you know, you put your plenties together and to make a bigger plenty. So, it's a really enterprising kind of idea.
Yeah. Well, without interest, there is no shortage.
Absolutely.
None at all.
So really, all we have to do is delete the interest rate.
Well, that's the first thing. Because once we've done that, we're only having, if say we're paying 50% of our income in interest, which is, I think is a conservative figure, say it's 50%, then once we abolish interest, right, we only have to work half the amount of hours for the same standard of living, we're doing half the amount of damage to the environment, and we've got plenty of time to sit around and talk with each other, which I would propose. Oh, I've got to turn my kettle off, it's making too much noise. Can you hear that?
It is, yeah, it's very much, it's like a... So, you know, I'll cover the time, but,
I'm trying to make coffee. I should have done it in the break.
Yeah. Well, you know, I didn't have enough time to do it in the break, and, I'm still warming up the milk. I have this whole thing, you know, it's what my grandma used to do. She used to have a tiny little saucepan and a tiny little gas ring, you know, little granny.
Yeah.
And she used to heat a cup's worth of milk in there and, she used to make her, you know, she used to put Nescafe on it. Oh God! some of our tastes have improved since those days, and we have proper coffee. Anyway,
proper tea, isn't it? Because proper tea is theft.
Proper tea is theft. Mm. I love all the tea. I love all the tea jokes. You know.
Yeah, I do as well.
So,
I'm just moving my kettle to somewhere else so I can put it on.
So, from the back of a truck, somewhere in East Ham, which is in the eastern side of London, has anyone ever seen EastEnders? I think it's probably about where the R is. I was born where the E of EastEnders is. Does anyone, if anybody knows what I'm talking about, the opening credits of the TV soap opera EastEnders is about the East End of London.
Oh, right.
And you're probably positioned about where the R is, and I grew up where the beginning E is. That's
okay.
That's where Bethnal Green is. The East End of London. Anyway, meanwhile.
How did you get a posh accent like that if you're born?
Radio 4. No kidding.
What, from listening to it?
Yeah, my parents didn't speak too much to me. I just listened to Radio 4 most of the time. They just had the radio going.
Cool.
Yeah. Received pronunciation. It's deeply embedded, you know, it's like, I can't do anything but like pronounce things properly if I can, you know.
As Spike Milligan would say, the beep, beep, seeb.
The beep, seeb, yes. Cause, you know, and of course I grew up with listening to all that sort of stuff, you know, Spike Milligan shows and BBC comedies and Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Oh yeah, the first time that was brilliant. Anywho, so meanwhile we were looking at the idea of global abundance and permaculture. Do you want to tell the people here? I have a kind of limited idea about what permaculture is about. I also am aware of hügel culture. Because you know I live in Findhorn. You know I live up here. Do you know where?
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh wow! You're talking from Findhorn.
Well, not in Findhorn, Bob, by Findhorn, but we're in the Findhorn zone. So, what Findhorn's about.
I have my own definition of permaculture, if you like.
Go on, talk about it.
It is to use all of our splendid and amazing technologies for the benefit of humanity as intended by the inventors. Without financial constraint.
Why not? What about all the stuff that they've hidden? You see, one of the things that I've been discovering over the last few years is that, you know, every time somebody's got a piece of invention that they've invented out of, breaking up an alien device and figuring out how it worked, they've all gone into, the patents are available. Yes. You just have to know what to ask for. And then they all go into what's known as the black budget projects. The BBP. Which, then, you know, the technology disappears and we never see it. But all of the technologies that you've seen in science fiction films, that already exists because they were more or less documentaries, just like Galaxy Quest was like joking. did you ever see Galaxy Quest?
No, but I have visited 4 crop circles.
All right. So
they are real.
They're very. What was your feeling? See, the thing about these things is the feeling that you get when you step into one. Tell me about what your feeling was, and I'll tell you about what mine was.
Well, I'm not going to discuss my feelings. I'll discuss my observations. Feelings. My feeling was utter amazement. Utter amazement. I'm an engineer, right? I could, if I had the machine tools and the equipment, I could build an engine from scratch, I could make a car, I could build a ship and sail it on the sea, I can build a house from the bottom to the top. I'm very practical, and I've served quite a few different apprenticeships in my time. Not officially, I haven't got any tickets or anything, but I'm quite widely experienced and I'm very practical. Now, if you bend a pipe or a straw, it will kink. It will not bend in a curve unless you steam it or put it on a pipe former. In the case of a copper pipe, you know, you get a pipe bending machine. But a pipe will collapse on the point of the bend, and it will crease. Yes?
I have bent pipes and straws, and I know whereof you speak. Go ahead. Let's talk about this. Go on, keep going.
Right, so when I went to this crop circle, basically, I lived in Glastonbury for 7.5 years, and I went there to campaign about the environment, and I was totally disappointed by the response that I got about the common law. I thought...
Oh, when did you live there?
I was there in 84, 85, round about that sort of time, mid-80s, mid to late 80s.
All right. you probably used to know my ex-wife.
4.5 years. I squatted a property in Glastonbury 4.5 years. I was there 4.5 years. The police came and I told them I was protecting life and property and upholding the law. They said, we've got no problem. Thank you, sir. Carry on.
Hey, did you ever meet a very tall woman with very dazzling blue eyes called Angela? That's my ex-wife. Hey. I met her in Glastonbury in 1985.
Oh, right. Maybe.
Yeah. No, sorry, 95. What am I talking about? 85.
Oh, 95. No, I wasn't there in 95.
Yeah, anyway. Meanwhile, there's small, but, yeah, so, there are,
crop circles, right?
Crop circles, Glastonbury, and, yeah, so,
What they say about crop circles is they say people do it with a plank of wood and two bits of string, and they walk around holding the bits of string, stepping on the plank of wood, and obviously crushing the corn down.
That's how they say they make a hoaxed one.
Yeah.
Okay, go on.
So if you go into a real one, it's quite easy to observe that the stalks of the corn, which would be flattened down to the ground level where a plank of wood to be squashed over them, the stalks are vertical and normal to a height of about 4 inches. And then they are bent over in a curve with about a quarter of an inch radius. And they're all bent the same way. They're almost plaited and woven very precisely and very beautifully. Right? Now, when you walk on a fresh, genuine crop circle, it's like walking on fresh snow. You're walking on a 4-inch high layer of corn stalks which are bent over. This is quite completely impossible with a plank of wood. And furthermore, these corn circles, these crop circles, are some of them 300 metres across. They occur in the middle of the night in 20-odd minutes, some of them in pouring rain, and not a footprint in sight. Now, I don't know if anyone's walked across a cornfield in the mud, in the rain, but a cornfield is basically a field of mud with the occasional, well, quite a lot of, but it's not like a grass field. A grass field is grass everywhere. Corn is growing every couple of inches in rows which are about 4 inches apart. So most of it is just bare mud. And if you walk across a bare mud field, even with corn growing out of it, in the rain, you're going to have lumps of mud sticking to your feet like an elephant, and you're going to leave elephant tracks everywhere. There's not a single footprint. Not one. Anywhere.
All right.
In the middle of the night, perfectly geometrical figures.
Absolutely. 4 inches high, I've seen them.
Curve. You know, this is an advanced technology.
Yep.
We're looking at. It's a very advanced. It's like Uri Geller to the millionth.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. Cause, you know, I do some research, and when I research things, I think, you know, I think deeply and I apply different angles of my knowledge to them. And part of this thing is the idea that yes, exactly as if it had been steamed. So I thought, hang on. What other things? And they've discovered that if you dig down in a crop circle, in a known crop circle, that is, you know, the pucker one, the water, which would normally be found underneath it, is dry.
Okay.
Okay. So what I'm saying is that the way that, you know, exactly as you're saying, the way this is formed is by a microwave type beam superheating the water instantaneously. And basically it just makes the stalks, basically it creates steam that probably hits a layer about 4 inches and they just lay down. They just lay just over as if you're bending a bamboo cane.
Well,
and it would happen in microseconds. And they it's known that these blown nodes, isn't it? The blown nodes are basically where this stuff has boiled. Basically, it's steam. You know, so that's very, what's the word? It matches with the concept of, I can't remember the proper word for this. It corroborates the idea that it's a microwave of some kind that is boiling the water. Now, the next thing is, who can make this kind of pattern? And I would say that the technology used in 9/11 and the technology that has been used to make potentially fake crop circles, because I think there are some real crop circles, as in really made by really extraterrestrials. And then there's faked by the military industrial complex using the microwave beam method and faked by Doug and Dave.
Right.
And then also there's Doug and Dave boast that they fake, which is a deliberate disinformation campaign. Mm. That's psychological. So there's a whole load of psychological operation going on in this. What do you think, Eco, is the motive behind faking crop circles like this?
To draw attention away from the motive for making the real crop circles.
Which is?
In my opinion, right, it's a very advanced technology, which can, I would say, manipulate physical matter at a subatomic level with precision and beauty. With that technology, it would be possible to probably make the Earth disappear in a puff of smoke, the same as the Twin Towers did, or dust. And if we had that technology, that's probably exactly what we'd do with it. So the people who've got that, the beings, whoever they, whether they're aliens or whether they're native to this planet, I do not know, but I do know, as much as I know anything for a fact, that these crop circles are made with a very advanced technology. So the civilization that made them is much older than us. And they've obviously, it seems to me, gone past the situation in their culture where, in possession of that technology, they would destroy themselves. In other words, they must be peaceful. And if you look at the crop circle designs, they're not the work of a psychopath. They are beautiful. They're the highest art form on the planet, in my opinion. And so why would they be making them? Well, let's imagine ourselves flying around in a UFO in possession of such advanced technology, and looking down at Earth and thinking to ourselves, well, look, they're making a right mess. They need energy. They need a clean, efficient form of energy, which we have. Obviously, they have that, the crop circles imply that strongly, where they have that technology. But would you give a 10-year-old child or a 5-year-old child, say, a box of matches and a stick of dynamite to play with? No, you wouldn't, right? So in my opinion, we're not going to get that technology. We're not going to be allowed to develop it or be given it unless or until we learn to behave ourselves properly with the toys we have already, which again points me strongly towards a permaculture revolution globally, right? That's the message as far as I'm concerned. We've got the technology and you're not getting it until you learn to behave yourself with what you've got already. It's as simple as that.
So,
you can read all kinds of theories into it, and people do. They spend lifetimes, you know, looking at all the mathematical, geometrical figures and everything and drawing all sorts of conclusions. But the basic message is, the technology is there, but you're not getting it. Not until you learn to behave yourself.
Or that you can figure this out and be mature enough. But
they have it figured out. Tesla figured it out, right? He had it figured out. It's about resonance. He had it figured out, and so have many other people. Stanley Mayer had it figured out when he was splitting water and making his water-powered car. You know, there's many people who've had this technology, figured it out, but they're not allowed to develop it. And I don't believe it's the CIA that's stopping it. The CIA would love to get their hands on it and use it. And if you look at 9/11, those two towers came down in 10 seconds flat, right? And in a normal demolition of anything, any kind of technology that we have, there would be a pile of rubble there of 125,000 odd tons of steel, concrete and glass in a big pile. When you look at the pictures afterwards, there's an ambulance standing there right where the towers were, and there's not a pile of rubble. There's a little bit of rubble, but there's nothing there, right? And it didn't go down through the seven floors below because the seven floors below are intact. There is no seismic record of 1.25 million tons of rubble hitting the ground. Because it didn't hit the ground, it turned into dust in 10 seconds flat. Now, thermite didn't do that. Plane fuel certainly didn't do it. Thermite didn't do it. Something else happened. So what that other thing happened was a very advanced technology, like you said. Wouldn't CIA and all those people and the Mossad and all those criminal...
The cabal has this
try,
in...
Try
yeah.
swear again.
I tell you, well, I mean, from what I've spoken to people, right? I've spoken to people and... Now, let me see. There were three round vehicles, three military UFOs that were high up in the sky. And they reflected a beam off a station in Guam. Okay, that was the vertical beam. So there was a beam that was sent from Guam that was then bounced off a mirror that was formed between three military UFOs formed as a triangle, that formed a lens that focused it down vertically onto the tops of the buildings. And then there was a teleported, second station that was teleported into a barge on the Hudson. which provided the horizontal beam. And this is scalar. So these beams just travel all the way. But when the two meet, that's when it would rewrite reality. And the odd-numbered elements, no, the even-numbered elements were teleported to a time domain. So iron, like 56, the iron disappeared. There wasn't any iron left, was there?
There was, but it was shipped off to China in about less than a day.
That's right.
There was iron left, and it was twisted into all kinds of unimaginable shapes.
Okay, so it's the other one. But whichever, you know, it would separate the odd numbered and the even numbered elements. The paramagnetic and the diamagnetic.
Mm-hmm.
The way. And it basically would, he said it rewrites reality like you'd rewrite a memory stick. So these were very high technologies that they were used. And then they teleported the thing back out again. They've been able to teleport things for a long time. They haven't been able to teleport people.
Well, I don't know. That's rather speculative to my mind. All I know is that...
Well, I can supply data for that. But anyway, but, you know...
If that's true, if the military have that technology...
Oh, absolutely they do, yeah.
Why aren't they using it in other places?
Because it's not the same military. There are lots of different levels of military. It's like... you know, Donald Trump's got his own security team,
mm-hmm.
right? That's a big company. You know, there's Blackwater or C or whatever they call them, Gzki, or whatever they are. They're all different, like, and armies are going private. All loads of different privatized armies, aren't there? So there's all different levels of what is military nowadays. And not all of it is controlled by governments or the Queen. And there's this small group that they're the ones who run Area 51 and that sort of thing. You've heard of Area 51?
I have.
Yeah. So that lot we call in general the secret space program. And they've got a lot of these toys that they've denied us. Anyway, we'll be seeing it soon. That's the good news, because the secret space program was part of the cabal, you know, Nazi conglomerate that has been... they keep throwing the can down the road. Have you often wondered why, you know, you just think they're just about, it's just about to happen and then something, it doesn't happen. The, you know, the climax doesn't happen because something has shifted again. And it feels like they're stealing time. Well, I do believe that they're actually using time travel technology to do so. I know this sounds like sci-fi, but anyway.
Well, I don't think we have that technology.
Okay.
Personally, I think it's an advanced technology with an advanced civilization.
Oh, it's advanced, but what I'm saying is that there is a civilization, there is what we call a breakaway civilization of Earth humans who right. have developed, in parallel to us, and they fly around in spaceships. I'm not kidding.
Sure. I don't know about that. Yeah. I don't know whether they're aliens or native and advanced or parallel or what. I don't know, but I know they've got an advanced technology.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Well, they got lots of various little, you know, it's all conjuring. You know, for instance, the 9/11 thing, all right, the first thing that you see is this big explosion off the side of the building when the apparent airplane apparently hits the apparent building. Mm-hmm. And it's just like a James Bond film. If that happened in reality, it wouldn't look like that. It was made to look like how it looks like in the movies so that people believe it. You see what I mean? It was all a big special effect, actually done by explosives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can watch slow motion films of the frames leading up to when the apparent airplane apparently crashes, and you see that the firecrackers go off just a little bit too early when it's supposed to make the wing form coming out of the building.
Yeah.
So you can see that very slowly. Anyway. Yeah, there's loads of things about 9/11 that were very, very deeply tricky using deep science.
Have you seen Dr. Judy Wood's documentary on it?
She talks about nanothermite, doesn't she?
She mentions it.
I believe that that's correct as well.
Well, I think three things happened on that day.
I think many, many, many things happened on that day. You're correct. All right, throw yours into the blanket. I'm going to throw yours, and I'll throw my keys in, and we'll have a, you know.
First thing,
a 9/11 swing.
I do believe there was a terrorist plot to blow it up, and I think the CIA or other bodies, you know, military intelligence, got hold of the plot and decided, right, we're going to use thermite and blame it on them. And then I think the aliens, whoever they are, these advanced technology came along, well, we're now going to show you who really is the boss. Right? And I think the cabal are quaking in their boots since 9/11 because they realise there's a technology way beyond anything they've got, and they're going to get it in the neck if they don't behave themselves. That's what I think.
All right. Well, yeah, well, I think, to be honest, that I believe the cabal did have that technology. That was, they're playing with their technology, pulling all their cards out, you know, they're using, and, you know, you hear Carol Rosen, and she's talking, oh, and the last card, the old Nazi guy said, you know. So it's a Nazi plan. They've had it for a long time. And
National Socialism.
Yeah. And, you know, really, I'd say you've had it. We've had it. We've had a Nazi thing for the last 9 years, 8 years, right? You know, because Barack Obama and Adolf Hitler had a very similar cabinet profile, in that he had his gay boyfriend in it. There's a whole kind of gay subculture that nobody dares talk about. That went on. Lesbian subculture as well. Because that's to do with the femcomp. Do you know about femcomp's involvement?
No.
Well, you know the Uhurus of this world. You know Lieutenant Uhura in Star Trek, the communications officer?
Yeah.
Often female. All through the war. The switchboard operators, the secretaries, all of that. Anyway, so eventually they privatize themselves out. And it's a women-only organization.
Right.
And they are the ones who look after the football.
Right.
They had the football on 9/11.
Which football?
The nuclear bomb key codes. They call it the football. Anyway, just to say, you know, that everybody thinks it's all tickety-boo, but it's not. Everything's been abstracted and, what's that word, hypothecated away from reality since 9/11. And we do need to come down to reality, what is really real, and who is the real enemy, if you could call it an enemy, because it's an aspect of ourselves. It's an aspect of ourselves that is very childish and doesn't want to have to integrate and negotiate. And to be honest, I think perhaps Trump is going to teach the world how to negotiate and integrate. And instead of making people good and bad and evil and destructive, you know, you put people to their right service, and they'll shine like the sun. What do you think?
I think the enemy is a state of mind. And we just have to, I mean, if you change someone's mind, then their actions are going to change. And my objective in life, if you go back, say, 40 years, I started as an environmental activist when I was a kid. I knew something was wrong. Even when I was 4 years old, I knew something was wrong. At that stage, if you talk to people about the environment, they'd say, what are you talking about, you idiot? There's no problem with the environment. There's people with university degrees. They know what they're talking about. They've got white coats on, can't you tell? And I didn't agree. But that's how it was. People would say, there's no problem, you're an idiot. Right? Now, if you talk to someone about the environment, if you can get them to talk about it, they'll say, yes, okay, there's a serious problem. It is as serious as the threat of world war, but there's nothing I can do about it. I don't want to talk about it. It hurts my head. I'm taking enough Prozac already. Leave me alone. Right? So effectively, the state of mind of the people has changed from there is no problem. In other words, that's negligence. They're damaging the planet without knowing, into knowingly, people know there's a problem, but they don't think they can do anything about it. Now, before anything can be done, that state of mind has to change. And it has to change from there is a problem, we can't do anything about it, into there is a problem, we can do something, let's do it. That is what has to happen before there's going to be any change. And that's my mission. And that is the enemy. It's a state of mind.
Correct. So it's very simple.
Absolutely simple. And if people knew the law, they'd know we can do something. Because there is something. We'd have the support of the police, the armed forces, the intelligence services, the builders, the farmers, the engineers, the miners, the fishermen, the drivers, the lumberjacks. Who's going to stop that? There won't even be a shot fired. It's overwhelming. Completely overwhelming.
So.
So my mission is to change people's minds. And that's why I call myself Eco-Taught Theatre. Eco is ecology. Taught is taught law, T-O-R-T. Comes from a Latin tortuous, meaning twisted or crooked. Contorted, distorted, torture, a tortuous path, etc. And a tort in law is a wrong committed by one person against another. There's two kinds of torts. There's personal injury and damage to property. And you can do either one of them accidentally, knowingly, or intentionally. That's the basic, that's where I come from. And Eco-Taught Theatre, I posted a link earlier when I was posting all those links in the break. One of them's got a picture of me with my arms crossed on my chest, and that's called A Day in the Life of a Lumberjack, and that's 13 minutes long, and it takes people on a journey of a day of a lumberjack in his life, and his mind changes, and there's a revolution. We end up with thousands of people marching down the street with a banner at the front saying the Green Movement, protecting life and property and upholding the law. And hypothetically, in the little story that I wrote, hypothetically, the police are told by the government, arrest them, put them back to work, destroying the planet, and the police say no. And that's how I see it happening. It's the simplest answer that I can think of. Now, if anyone's got a better idea, let me know and I'll stop banging my head against the wall.
Very good. I love, now I know what tort means. Thank you. You've given me at least one thing, is the understanding of the root of tort, as in distort, and yeah, and to restore even.
Torture, contorted, distorted.
Torture, wow.
Tortious, T-O-R-T-I-O-U-S, it's Latin.
Uh-huh, which means to bend.
Twisted.
Twist.
Torsion.
Torsion, twist, yes. So, twisted minds.
Twisted indeed.
Let's twist again.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, so indeed, let's get twisted. So, chocolate eco tour. And thank you, Lara. Of course, Mirthling would think of that tort was a cake. Of thought, of course you would. Of course you would. Excellent. Well, it's been very interesting having you on. It's been, how do we address you? Eco or Nick?
Nick, please.
Oh, we can call you Nick. All right.
Yes, please.
So this is Nick. And, Tortellini. Yes, yeah, very good.
Yeah.
Tortellini. Yeah, so, cause it's, now you've twisted everybody. Everybody is, and yeah, there is even a user called Twist Was Here, so.
That's right, of course, yeah. There is, rather, sorry.
So there we go. That's all fun. That's all fun. And so what's your, yeah, give out your website. What's your details?
Shall I put it in the link or shall I just
can you put it into Wall Spirit and I will copy it and put it into the Revolution Radio chat room as you do so. Okay. So Nick is currently typing his details into the chat room. Maybe I should put this. Oh yeah, but anyway, this has been an education. Anyone got any questions out there on Wolf Spirit, or even I'm looking on the Revolution chat room, and I'm looking on the, there we go, ecotaught.blogspot.co.uk. There we go. So let me just pop that into the. So you can tell. So now I'm popping it into the Rev chat room. http://, there we go. There we go. Borg, Cyborg, Archon, yeah, what? Link race. there we go.
That's my Facebook personal page. The last one I've just put is, okay. Brecking Aquifers page. It's the most important one, really.
That is indeed. Alright. Oh, very good. Oh, very good.
I can give you one before I go.
Yeah, yeah, go on.
My YouTube channel. I've got some videos on there. Anyone who can't keep up with my, I know I talk fast, but,
yeah, but maybe I should, there are certain guests that I've had, like, Solaris Blue Raven and, Laura Eisenhower, who speak incredibly fast. I've often thought about supplying, you know, actually, literally slowing the show down, resampling it so it slows it right down, so yeah. People can hear their words a little bit better. So, Nick, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure, and I'm delighted to be on here, and I'd love to You know what I'd like to do? I'd like to start a radio theatre company.
That sounds...
We could have a Skype group, right? Uh-huh. We could improvise a script. We have a meeting on Skype between a bunch of people, and we have a theme which we've agreed we're going to deal with that theme. And then we just chuck our ideas back until we develop a story, then we write the script, and then we perform it as a radio theatre.
That sounds fabulous. If anybody's interested, please connect with Nick at the Wolf Spirit Radio chat room. ecotort.blogspot.com.au. And that's it for us. Thank you so much.
Come on.